Hi, everyone, and welcome back to the Fueling Forward podcast. I'm your host, registered dietitian, and former professional runner, Maddie Alm. Today's episode is a Q&A where I'll be answering questions that have been submitted to me beforehand by listeners. So if you would like to submit any questions for future episodes, you can do so on my website at www.fuelingforward.com under the podcast tab, or you can email me at fuelingforwardpodcast@gmail.com. Thanks so much for listening, and I hope you enjoyed today's episode. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Fueling Forward podcast. I hope everyone had a great holiday season, a great start to the new year. As I've mentioned before, I am the producer, the editor, all the things for the podcast, and I've absolutely loved doing it, but it's a lot of work. So I just needed a little reset. So I appreciate everyone sticking with me. I know a lot of you reached out to ask when the next one was coming out. So I'm really excited that we're getting back into it this year. I've got some exciting guests lined up. So I hope you guys are all able to get something out of upcoming episodes. But I figured we would kick it off with a Q&A episode. Update for me, nothing new really, just enjoying the not cold front weather out here in LA. I'm thinking about you if you're snowed in and frozen in over on, you know, the East Coast. I know a lot of other places it's really, really cold. So hopefully you guys are staying warm. And if you're having to train on a treadmill, I have a love-hate relationship with treadmills. I love that they allow you to get your workout in no matter the weather. And I love that they allow you to kind of control the pace and the environment. But I also feel like they're kind of torture chambers at the same time. So if you're stuck on a treadmill, hopefully you're finding ways to pass the time. Maybe this podcast can help you. I've definitely put a lot of miles in on treadmills, and I know it goes by really slow, but one of my favorite phrases is the time will pass anyway. So you might as well pass it getting your workout in on a treadmill. So hope everyone's staying warm. We had a great holiday season. We drove back to Colorado and it was 70 degrees the whole time. Colorado's having a scary warm winter. They've had almost no snow. So we were hoping for a white Christmas, and our dog Charlie, who's a Bernedoodle, she's part Bernese, part poodle, she's obsessed with cold weather and snow. So we were really hoping she'd be able to get some snow. We got her some boots to go snowshoeing, and unfortunately there was no snow, but she got to go swimming on Christmas instead because it was so warm. So she still had a great time. We really enjoyed getting to see our family. The new year is off to a good start. So a couple quick Fueling Forward announcements. I have some one-on-one coaching spots opening up in February, and Alexa Ephraimson, who's now Alexa Guzman, she was married last year. She is the newest dietitian at Fueling Forward, and she also has some spots available for one-on-one coaching. So if you're interested in working with either of us, you can go check out our website, learn more about us, and apply to work together there. And then if you are a high school runner, we have a couple days left if you're interested in signing up for our winter boot camp series. It's just a 4-week program. We meet once a week, typically in the evenings, Monday, Tuesday, or Wednesday. And it's just a 45-minute Zoom session. We cover different topics specific to nutrition for high school runners. You actually get a blood panel that's specific to high school runners as well, and an interpretation. So lots of good resources there if you're interested in just learning a little bit more about what fueling should look like for you as you head into the spring track season. Again, that's going to be on our website under the group programs tab, so feel free to check that out. And once again, thank you so much to everyone who has submitted any questions. Don't forget, you can also submit requests for people that you'd like to hear on the podcast, or suggestions. So that's always really helpful. I'm always looking for people who have great stories that would, you know, be a good guest to have on the podcast. So feel free to drop your recommendations and continue to submit questions. We've got a good list from the month of December, but, you know, always looking to build those up more. So keep submitting your questions. And with that, let's go ahead and get into today's Q&A. Okay, so I had previously touched on this topic, but I got a couple questions about it. So I wanted to bring this question up today. It says, "Hi, Maddie, can you tell us more about collagen and when someone would use it? I've seen it recommended for various things and wanted to know what the evidence shows. For context, I'm a female runner. Thank you." Yes, awesome question. So I just want to talk about what it is. So collagen is sort of a building block for all of the tissues in our body. So tendon, ligament, bone, joints, all that. use collagen to build those tissues. And collagen is a type of protein. Protein is really having its moment in the spotlight right now, which that's a whole other thing, especially for runners. So I'll kind of save that for another day. But collagen is a type of protein. And within the categories of protein, we have what are called more complete proteins. So proteins that contain all 20 essential amino acids that our body is not able to produce. And then we have incomplete proteins, which do not contain all 20 essential amino acids. Complete proteins are pretty much primarily animal-based proteins. Plant-based proteins are almost always incomplete, but I would say those terms are a little bit outdated in that a lot of plant-based proteins, they do contain all the essential amino acids, just not in the quantity that we need them by themselves. So if you're eating a variety of plant-based proteins as a plant-based athlete throughout the day, chances are you're going to be hitting your essential amino acid needs. So not a concern there. Timing of those types of protein definitely matters when you're an athlete. Whey protein has one of the best amino acid profiles. So post-workout, a whey-based protein option, or soy protein is kind of the next best option. Those two are going to be great options for recovery because they contain some specific amino acids that really help with muscle protein synthesis. So a little background on protein there, and I wanted to mention that because collagen is lacking in some of those essential amino acids that we would want to see in a protein for post-workout. So for that reason, I don't recommend collagen if you're making a protein drink for post-workout. It's not the best option just because it's missing some of those essential amino acids that are really helpful for building muscle and recovery post-training. That said, the time that collagen can be really beneficial and what we've primarily seen from research is that it can help with tissue regeneration when it's used in a very specific way. So a good example here, a lot of research has been done on ACL repairs and collagen. And what we have found is that if you consume collagen, and you have to consume it alongside vitamin C. So vitamin C and collagen work together to generate new tissue. So when you pair collagen with vitamin C, you're giving your body those two nutrients that work together to build new tissue. And what the research has shown is if you're consuming collagen paired with at least 50 milligrams of vitamin C, so that's equivalent to about 4 to 8 ounces of orange juice. If you're consuming those together 30 to 60 minutes before you're doing any type of rehab, so when you're rehabbing an injury, you're increasing blood flow to that injured area. So the combination of doing that motion where you're increasing blood flow to the injured tissue and providing those building blocks to help build and generate new tissue. Together, the theory is that can help speed up the healing process. And we have seen in research that it's promising. We've seen people who are doing that collagen regimen consistently heal a bit faster than people who are not. So that is something if you are rehabbing an injury, even bone-related injuries, you know, if you're doing some type of rehab, like for example, shins, you know, if you started out with a shin splint and now you have a stress fracture in your shin and you're doing some type of rehab for your shin, introducing that collagen and vitamin C before rehabbing can definitely be helpful. Any type of soft tissue, you know, plantar, high hamstring, shin, any of that stuff, definitely helpful to incorporate that collagen and vitamin C 30 to 60 minutes before rehab exercises or even before you're doing like strength training. If you're cross training, you can do it then as well. The nice thing about collagen is that it's really not going to upset your stomach. And there's even some research that collagen can help improve gut health because collagen can heal and repair the gut tissue lining if you have a lot of inflammation or damage from, you know, an illness or food allergies, things like that. We've seen collagen have the ability to improve gut health as well. So those are a couple of more research-based suggestions for the use of collagen. When you're choosing a collagen, I recommend looking for a collagen peptide option. And if you're a drug-tested athlete, making sure that it's an NSF-certified option. So vital proteins, their collagen peptides are NSF certified. Momentous is another option, Clean Athlete. And you're looking for a dose that's at least 10 grams of collagen. So usually the doses are between 10 to 20 grams. And then again, you know, about 50 milligrams of vitamin C. So what I would typically do if I was using collagen, I would get a shaker bottle and pour about 4 to 8 ounces of orange juice in there. You can add water if you want more liquid, and then add that collagen powder, shake it up. Collagen actually dissolves pretty well. So usually I would shake that up, you know, before my workout, and then I would drink it in between finishing my workout and doing my rehab. You just want to be mindful that you'd have to keep it cold. So you could even put ice cubes in there, or if you have like a lunchbox with a cold pack, that would keep it cold. That's also a great option. And then you could also make a smoothie with collagen. So you could use, you know, frozen fruit, that collagen powder and orange juice, add some yogurt in there maybe to add a little more protein. Great ways to incorporate that. Things like collagen gummies or adding collagen to your coffee. Those things don't really work in the way that we want them to. They're not usually in the correct dosage. So especially collagen gummies, they're usually a very low dose of collagen, and it's not going to provide us with that therapeutic dose that we need to see the effect. And then mixing it into your coffee, you know, coffee generally decreases absorption of pretty much everything. So it's not as effective. And then of course you're lacking that vitamin C. So, you know, mixing it with your coffee does provide more protein. So it's not a total loss or anything like that, but it's just not going to do what we want it to do if we're using collagen for something like rehabbing an injury. Unfortunately, with collagen, some of the big claims by a lot of like trendy supplement companies are things like hair, skin, and nail health. The research does not back that up. What we have found is that people who do not consume enough protein, they are more likely to have issues with hair, skin, or nails. So adding collagen, which is just adding protein, can help improve the quality of hair, skin, and nails, but only in people who have protein deficiencies or insufficiencies. In people who are consuming enough protein, getting that extra collagen does not have an effect on hair, skin, or nails. So a lot of times if you're somebody who started taking collagen and you did notice a change, it was probably more related to needing to eat more protein overall rather than the actual supplementation of collagen itself. So again, if you're going to use collagen, really I would say specifically using it to rehab an injury, not something that you need to use indefinitely. I would say it's kind of a good temporary tool while you're coming back from an injury or, you know, rehabbing anything. And then again, the timing and the way that you're using it does matter in terms of it working. So 30 to 60 minutes before training and making sure that you're combining it with vitamin C. Another question that I had seen in the submissions was asking about calcium and collagen. Calcium does not interfere with the absorption of collagen. So there's not really anything that's going to interfere with the absorption aside from, you know, coffee generally just doesn't work well with absorption of most nutrients, but there's no other issue with combining it with other foods. You know, something to think about if you're an athlete that takes an iron supplement, if you're mixing collagen with orange juice, that could be a good combination to take your iron with because you've got the vitamin C to help with absorption. But if you make your collagen into a smoothie and there's dairy in there like yogurt, you wouldn't want to take your iron with that because the calcium in the dairy can interfere with the absorption of the iron, but it won't interfere with the absorption of collagen. So it's not super finicky in that way. Definitely easy to time as well. So thank you for that question. That was a great one. Okay, this next question comes from Taylor. And Taylor says, last track season, I lost weight and took a minute and a half off my 3200 time. Now I'm underweight and I lost my period. I know science and I know that my improvement can be attributed to lifting and higher mileage, and continuing to stay this weight is not sustainable, but I still associate my success with being smaller. Do you have any advice on how to change my mindset so I can be a healthier runner? Yes, fantastic question, Taylor. And I love that you're able to recognize that this is probably not sustainable. Of course, it's human to make that connection and say, well, I'm smaller, so that's probably why I got faster. And that can be a real mental hang up in allowing your body to shift, especially if you've lost your period and there's any type of increase in fuel, potentially some weight gain that needs to happen. I know that can be really scary, and that's a very natural fear to have. So first of all, just validating that for yourself and saying it makes sense, right? We don't have to say like, no, don't feel that way. It's okay to feel that way, but we don't have to act on those emotions. We don't have to use those emotions as a guide for making our decisions, right? Two things can be true. It can be scary to gain weight, but we can also know that we are not in a healthy place and we need to make some changes. So just acknowledging that, validating that for yourself, and then trying to pivot into the logical side of things. So you already mentioned that you feel like your improvements could be attributed to lifting and to higher mileage. That is absolutely true. If you remember, I talked about this a little bit before. Correlation is where the two things are happening at the same time, but they don't necessarily cause each other. So like kind of typical example they would give us in statistics class in college was like, you know, ice cream sales go up in the summer and so do murders. Ice cream sales are not causing murders or vice versa. Usually the underlying factor is that it's summertime. So it's light out longer. It's warmer outside. More people are out and about. You know, there's not a direct relationship between those two things, but it would be really easy to look at them and say they're causing each other. So that's often what happens with those performance improvements. We say, I lost weight, which is what made me faster. But let's think about all the other things that are happening around that training or outside factors, aside from the way that your body looks or how much you weigh, that probably impacted your training. First of all, this is probably a new track season for you. And now maybe you were a freshman before and now you're a sophomore. Or maybe you were a sophomore, now you're a junior. The more experience that you have racing, typically the better we get at it. The more we learn, the better we get, the faster we run, right? So just experience first and foremost. You have another year of experience under your belt. The second thing to think about is the training piece. Again, typically if you're an incoming freshman, mileage is going to be a little lower, intensity is going to be a little bit lower. As you build up your body to tolerate that training, you're getting stronger, you're getting faster, you're gaining more muscle. All of those things are going to contribute to your performance improving. Another, I would say, tricky aspect to this is that, unfortunately, physiologically speaking, if we lose a bunch of weight suddenly, yes, we will often see a very temporary improvement in performance. Physics comes into play here. If we're thinking about moving mass through space, if in a short period of time that amount of mass decreases, we're going to see that initially improve performance. We're initially going to see ourselves get faster. That's where it can be a slippery slope because it is not sustainable. It is not something that's going to last. And I see a lot of high school runners, especially, or high schoolers transitioning into college, get really frustrated because they think about when they ran their PR. And most likely, a lot of the time, they were not at a healthy weight or body composition. At least they weren't at a sustainable one. And so in their mind, they're like, oh, I need to get back to that body size or that body weight in order to PR again. And so now we're digging ourselves into this perpetual hole and we're stuck in this cycle where we're probably getting injured, we're probably dealing with underfueling or reds, and now we're really struggling with our performance because our body just can't maintain that. It can't sustain that type of training with that minimal amount of resources. So that weight that you PR'd at, chances are you're not going to be able to get there again safely or in a healthy way. And even if you do, that does not mean that's going to unlock a good performance for you. So it can be really hard when you have this number in the back of your mind, I need to weigh this in order to PR. Chances are if that happened one time, it was maybe not because things were done in a healthy or sustainable way, and it's probably not going to be something you can maintain. The other thing to think about is that as you get better at running, PRs get fewer and farther in between. So taking a minute and a half off of your 3200 time is amazing. Chances are most of that had nothing to do with your weight changes. It probably had to do with learning how to race, understanding how to pace yourself, like I said earlier, just kind of understanding more about what racing looks like. Most of us, when we first started running, we were afraid of blowing up at the end. So we started our race too slow. Maybe we had way too much left in the tank at the end. And then we're like, oh, I probably should have run harder. And then we do. And then that amount of time that we run faster by gets smaller and smaller and smaller until we're not really PRing every race, or it's taking a lot longer into the season for us to PR. That's something that's really difficult. Like as a pro athlete, PRs are so small and so few and far between that if you're just measuring the success of your running career by running PRs, it can start to get really frustrating and you can feel like you're stuck. So that's definitely something to keep in mind as well, is that as you get better and as you learn more about running and yourself, PRs are going to get smaller and farther between. And that doesn't mean it's because your body has shifted or that you need to change your body to start PRing again. It's just the reality of the sport. So Taylor asked, how can I change my mindset so I can be a healthier runner? Aside from those other things that I just already went through, so reminding yourself logically, what are some of the other reasons I could have PR'd? What's changing for me in my running career aside from my weight? What am I learning about the sport? Am I getting stronger? All of those things are going to be important to reflect on. The other thing to think about is what's going to happen if I continue on this path? And this is so hard to wrap your mind around, especially as a young athlete, where I think we have a harder time when we're younger really thinking about the future, right? Like I tell young athletes this all the time. When you're in your teens, when you're in high school, you are building the bones that you're going to have for the rest of your life. But when you're 15 or 16, it can be easy to say, oh, I don't really care, like what my bones look like when I'm 60, or I don't really feel like that's a connection that speaks to me. I'm not really thinking about myself as an older adult right now. I'm in high school, I'm just thinking about this season. And a lot of us tend to have really short-term mindsets when we're younger because we're really focused on the now, which is great. But in some situations, it is really important to try to think big picture, long term. And this is the one body that you have. Taylor mentioned that she's not having a regular period. So we do know that not having consistent exposure to estrogen for your bones can be really detrimental to bone health. We also know that your body not having a regular cycle indicates that it doesn't feel safe. So we're going to see it start to impact your health and performance in other ways as well. And that is going to affect how you perform in a negative way. A lot of athletes tend to think that they might be the exception to the rule. So they say, I know for everyone else it doesn't work out, but it might for me. Harsh reality here, just dietitian Maddie being harsh a little bit. You're not the exception. It will catch up to you. And it just depends on the person how long that takes and when that actually happens. For some people, it catches up to them while they're still in high school. For some, it takes until they're in college. For some, it takes until they're post-collegiate, but it does and will catch up to you. Nobody is an exception to that rule. So thinking instead about, okay, I know that I've lost my period, my weight has gone down, which is probably a reflection of underfueling. What can I do to course correct now before it becomes too late and affects me in a really big way? If it's a temporary period of underfueling, the good news with that is it's usually a relatively easy fix and it can be a really quick turnaround in terms of getting your period back, not losing any bone density, not getting injured, staying healthy. But it does require you to pivot pretty quickly and acknowledge that, okay, I'm probably not doing things in a sustainable way. If you're pretty far down the road, not all hope is lost by any means. You can always, always, always change your course. And every person is different in terms of how long it takes them to recover or come back from that deficit. But the more time you spend in that deficit, the more extreme that deficit is, and the longer you go on without correcting it, the more extreme the consequences are. And usually that's when we see athletes get in injury cycles with repeat bone stress injuries. They're really struggling with low iron. Their performance is just tanking because their body can't sustain that effort. It just does catch up to you. And then it's really frustrating when it does, because that's a hard place to be, stuck in those injury cycles or just not feeling good running, not feeling like yourself. So thinking about this as a fork in the road, you've recognized that you're at one. You recognize that, okay, I was running really well, but I lost a lot of weight. I lost my period, which probably means I'm not in a healthy place. I can choose to change and to go the route that's going to help me be healthy in the long term, or I can stay on this route. And again, we know for a fact that if you stay on this route, it will catch up to you and it will affect your performance at some point. We don't know, how much better you could be or how much stronger you could be, how much faster you could run if you were to fuel yourself properly. So, really trying to look at this as another aspect of your training. You're putting in all this time and effort to get better. We also want to make sure we're doing that with our fueling to support all the training that we're doing so our body can actually improve and build up rather than break down. And I know that's not a mindset shift that comes easily. If you're looking for more guidance on this, Elise Cranny, her episode from last year, she talked about this a lot and she has such a great perspective on how to handle that mental side of things, especially when it comes to body shifts. So if you haven't already listened to that one, I think that's a really great one to listen to. She has a lot of super insightful things to say. But thank you so much for your question, Taylor, and best of luck this track season. All right, next question comes from JS. And JS says, what would you look for in a multivitamin for a runner in his 30s? Is it okay to take it every other day? I believe I eat a balanced diet, but figured it can't hurt to take one. Super great question. Yes. So, generally speaking, a couple ways to look at multivitamins. One is that they're sort of like an insurance policy. So, if you're, worried that you're missing certain nutrients, most multivitamins are going to cover your bases in terms of general nutrients. So, here we're talking about things like the B vitamins, potentially vitamin A, vitamin E, sometimes vitamin D, and then maybe a couple of other minerals. Some of them include iron, some of them don't. Some have calcium, some don't. Magnesium, just kind of thinking about all those different components. In terms of a recommendation for a multivitamin, this one is so individualized, and for me, really depends on blood work. Usually, a runner who's, 20s, 30s, I don't always have runners take a multivitamin, especially if we feel like we're getting enough from their diet specifically. However, blood work can be a super great indicator for if we're missing anything. So, specifically looking at, I've mentioned this before, iron labs, so making sure you're getting a CBC panel, which tells you about the health of your red blood cells. There is a value on that CBC panel called MCV, which is looking at the size of your red blood cells. If that number is high, that can indicate potentially a B12 or folate deficiency. So if I'm looking at somebody's blood work and I see that a little bit out of range, then we might dive a little deeper into diet and look at those B vitamins. Specifically with B vitamins like B12 and folate, there can be genetic differences in how we process those vitamins. So there usually are a couple forms that we find those in our vitamins. There's a form called the methylated form, so the active form, and then there's the non-methylated form, which is the form that our body has to activate itself. And for some people, there is a genetic difference in how we are able to methylate or activate those vitamins. And for some people, even if they're consuming enough B vitamins or vitamin B12 or folate, we may still see blood levels low if there is that genetic difference. So, if I'm looking at an athlete who has been struggling with low iron and we have some of those indicators that we may have some low B vitamins, then what I'm probably going to do is look for a supplement that has the methylated form of those B vitamins for that athlete specifically. So, those are some of the considerations I'm looking at as a dietitian with a multivitamin. For the most part, if we are getting enough nutrients from our diet, most of the nutrients in the multivitamins are water soluble, meaning that whatever we don't need, we will pee out. And a lot of those nutrients are in those multivitamins in very high quantities that we won't use. So, we do end up peeing them out for the most part. Of course, not always, and of course, not for everybody, but a lot of times it's just kind of an expensive thing that we're taking that we don't really need. The other issue I have with a lot of multis is that they don't have the best dose of things like iron. So, if you need to take iron, most multis only have anywhere from 8 to 18 milligrams, which is probably too low if you have low iron. So, in that case, usually I'm going to recommend an iron supplement that has B vitamins in it. And then again, looking at other nutrients in blood work like vitamin D. If you have low vitamin D levels, the amount that's present in most multis is not going to be adequate enough to restore your vitamin D levels. So in that case, we'd be adding a separate vitamin D supplement. And so for most athletes, I'm recommending more individual vitamins or minerals depending on blood work and, history and things like that. I think the population of athletes who may benefit more from a multivitamin would be high schoolers, teen athletes, athletes that are still growing, that have just higher nutrient needs and generally don't eat quite enough of those nutrients. Potentially, we have a vegan runner who does not consume any animal products. That's where we find majority of B12. So if you're not consuming animal products, you may need to think about a multivitamin that has B12 in it. Or let's say, you're traveling a lot for work, you're inconsistent with your fueling, you feel like you're missing out on getting a lot of nutrient-dense foods. Definitely not harmful to take that. I think the main thing to be on the lookout for is the dose of the nutrients in that multivitamin. Some brands go way, way, way overboard, with the nutrients in there, and that can cause imbalances of other nutrients depending on what we're looking at. So, for example, like really high doses of zinc is not something I recommend for athletes. If we have too high doses of those kinds of minerals like copper or zinc, that could affect iron. Sometimes if we have too high doses of certain vitamins, then we're gonna see other vitamins be affected as well. So it just really depends on the person. I would say there's no one size fits all recommendation for a multivitamin, but the question was, what would you look for in a multivitamin? I would look for potentially the methylated form of B12 and folate. If you're looking at a label, methyl is going to be in front of the word for vitamin B12 in the long form of the word, which is methylcobalamin. And then if you're looking at folate, the active or methylated form of that is 5-MeO-THF. And then generally speaking, looking for like the percent of your daily intake, I don't recommend getting that like way, way, way over 100%. Some of the B vitamins are going to be in the thousands, but you don't need them to be in the 10,000s or anything like that. Biotin is one to be mindful of, especially if you do have a thyroid condition or you take a thyroid hormone. High doses of biotin can affect your blood test results. So keeping that in mind as well. Any interactions with other medications that you're taking, interactions with other supplements that you're taking, definitely important to keep in mind. And then, of course, as I've mentioned before, looking for third-party tested options instead of ones that are not, just to make sure that what is on the label is actually what's in the supplement, reducing risk of contamination with things that you don't want in there. Things like that are also important. So just a couple things to be on the lookout for. Honestly, one of the better just general multivitamins that has a pretty solid dose of nutrients that's not overdoing it is just the Nature Made brand that you would get at Target with the yellow cap. That tends to be pretty sufficient for athletes who are needing, a little bit of support with a multivitamin. Again, unless we've done blood work and we've found that you need more support with iron or B12, in which case I have different recommendations that I'll give based on the athlete's blood work specifically. Okay, the last question for today says, new parent here struggling to find time and energy and remember to feed myself with a baby. As an athlete, I know how important it is, but time will fly by as I take care of another person's needs and tune my own out. Would love advice and/or a podcast guest to share. Love this question. And there actually are going to be a couple podcast guests coming up who are moms and are going to talk all about postpartum and fueling themselves as athletes. So definitely stay tuned for that. But going back to the start of your question, first of all, congratulations on becoming a new parent. That's so exciting. I know there's a lot of things that you have to now consider that you didn't before. So first and foremost, just give yourself some grace. It's going to take some time for you to adjust and find a routine. There's no such thing as getting it perfect. Just doing the best that you can is important. If you are breastfeeding, definitely a couple different considerations from a fueling and hydration standpoint. Getting enough in, getting enough hydration is going to be really critical for milk supply. So if you ever start to notice your milk supply dwindle, you know, really being mindful of getting more hydration, aiming for at least 3 liters of fluids a day, and then making sure you're getting plenty of calories, you know, adding more fats to your diet can be really helpful there. Regardless of whether or not you're breastfeeding, of course, it's very important for you to take care of yourself. You know, you can't pour from an empty cup. You have to make sure that you have the resources and the energy to care for your little one. So I think making it easy on yourself, minimizing the amount of time that it's going to take you to prep something or make something is really key. So if you have another caregiver or partner at home who can help with this, they would be a really great resource to lean on right now and really encourage them to help you with some meal prep stuff. I think meal prepping is usually the biggest thing I recommend for new parents. Is just taking a little bit of time, you know, at the beginning of the week or over the weekend to prepare some things and freeze them so you can heat them really quickly throughout the week. So a couple really easy options, make ahead breakfast sandwiches. That's one of my favorite things to do for breakfast. So when I've made these before, I've Googled high protein breakfast sandwich meal prep. And basically the main takeaway from that is you blend eggs and cottage cheese in a blender. You pour it onto a baking sheet, you bake it in the oven, and then you cut it out using like a cookie cutter. So it looks like a egg McMuffin patty. And then you can assemble your breakfast sandwiches on English muffins, bagels, bread, whatever you like for your carb. And then I usually add cheese and some type of breakfast meat. So whether that's sausage or bacon or even just deli slices of ham to keep it simple. Wrap those up in parchment paper and then put that in a big Ziploc bag. And then you can reheat it in the morning directly in that parchment paper. You know, you can pair that with like a drinkable yogurt, a glass of milk, a piece of fruit to make that really balanced. And that will come together in 2 minutes for you in the morning. So things like that, overnight oats, you can prep chia seed pudding, you can prep baked oatmeal is also one of my favorites. Oats are also great for milk supply. So, you know, looking up different recipes for baked oatmeal, muffins are also great. All of these things are super freezer friendly and things that you can just heat up really quickly in the morning. So for a lot of parents, breakfast, getting the day started with something, really helpful to have some things on hand for that. For lunches, thinking again about things you can throw together really quickly. So now might be a good time for you to look at some pre-packaged options. You know, Trader Joe's, for example, sells pre-marinated meats. Throw that in the oven. They also sell meatballs. You know, throw those in the oven. Frozen pouches of rice that you can reheat in the microwave or on the stovetop. And then bags of mixed veggies. You can get pre-cut veggies because chances are, especially if you've got babies strapped to you, you're probably not going to be doing a lot of chopping. So buying things pre-chopped, you know, so that takes that extra step of prep out for you. And just throwing together a bowl. So getting different salad dressings, sauces. You know, I love getting like the Green Goddess dressing at the store. That's really great for making a quick grain bowl. Soy sauce is great as well for that. You know, roasting sweet potatoes or potatoes that you can mix in as well. Just kind of thinking about how can I check those boxes of the carb, the color, the protein, and the fat in the simplest way possible. You know, using frozen options to fill in gaps as much as possible. Like I said, the pre-chopped, pre-marinated options are also super helpful for these times. And then I would say the crock pot, if you have one, is going to be a great resource for this time in your life. You know, throwing something in at the beginning of the day so that you have a hot meal in the evening. Typically, crock pot meals are going to make tons of food. So you can even use those leftovers for lunches and dinners throughout the week. Usually, I recommend only trying to cook dinner, you know, 2 to 3 times per week, depending on how big your family is and how many people you're trying to feed. And making enough so you have leftovers on those other nights that can really take away that burden of, oh my gosh, I have to cook 7 days this week. There's no way that's gonna happen. So kind of picking a couple days where it makes sense for you to do a big batch of dinner or your partner to do that for you, family, whoever you have supporting you can help with that hopefully as well. And then just kind of prepping that when you can. In terms of remembering to feed yourself, this can also be very difficult. So if you are breastfeeding, getting a cart to put next to wherever you're gonna breastfeed filled with snacks, trail mix, beef jerky sticks, crackers, you know, anything that you can think of, non-perishable, I would say, of course, for the carts, bars even, RX bar, Clif bar, Kind bar, go macro bar, just things that you can put on that cart so you have a constant supply of snacks next to you while you're breastfeeding is great. For carrying around the baby, thinking about things that are easier to eat. So again, the bars, rather than like making an apple and peanut butter, which is probably going to be a bit messy and a bit difficult, smoothies, drinkable options would be great for snacks as well. So just having those things that you can quickly grab and eat. And then lastly, setting reminders for yourself. So either, you know, on your phone, having a little alarm go off, although you may not want to do that if you have a sleeping baby, but even just like a little buzz alert go off on your calendar, you know, setting a little reminder every 3 hours throughout the day so you have a physical prompt that's reminding you, hey, you need to eat something. Really trying your best not to go more than 4 hours without eating. That's going to help keep your energy levels up. Make sure you're getting enough to fuel yourself. But really, yeah, convenience options are going to be really great for you right now. There's no shame in using prepackaged foods. This is a great time to do that. There are definitely still ways to make that nutrient dense. And then continue to take your prenatal. That's the other thing I would say. We just talked about multivitamins. One situation I didn't mention is pregnancy or preparing for pregnancy or recovering from pregnancy. Those are situations where you want to take your prenatals, if possible, if you're family planning, for about 3 months prior to starting your attempt to conceive, throughout pregnancy, and then about 6 months to a year postpartum, depending on whether or not you're breastfeeding. So definitely continuing to take those prenatals, make sure your body has access to those nutrients. You have completely depleted your resources for your baby throughout pregnancy and then postpartum, again, especially if you're breastfeeding. So really being mindful of just keeping that in, again, as an insurance policy. That is a situation where I would recommend an athlete keep a multivitamin in, especially if you're training. And then being really smart about your training too, acknowledging if you had a bad night of sleep, if you didn't eat enough, it may not be worth forcing your run. Postpartum injuries are so common because a lot of times everyone's depleted from, again, from pregnancy. They're very sleep deprived. Recovery is really taking a hit. And then, of course, your body has changed a lot. Your pelvic floor has changed a lot. So just really not trying to force a timeline, to force mileage. Be smart about that comeback. If you have the resources to meet with a pelvic floor PT, highly recommend, something that can be a game changer for postpartum recovery, especially when it comes to running. Making sure you're fueling before your runs. Do not go out and run without eating something first. You know, that's going to be really critical for that recovery window. But I would say, generally speaking, take a little time to meal prep. Use those prepackaged convenience options if you need them, for sure. Don't be afraid to do that. And then just maybe take a second over the weekend to plan out your week so you have a little bit of an idea of which nights you're cooking, which nights you're not. You have leftovers for those other nights. And then having those reminders so that you have a physical prompt to remind yourself to eat something, because it's understandable that your mind is elsewhere. So I hope that's helpful, and best of luck for you with the recovery and getting back into training. All right, those are all the questions for today. Thank you so much to everyone who submitted questions for today's episode. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm excited to be back here with all of you, and I hope everyone's 2026 is off to a great start. Thank you so much for listening to today's episode of the Fueling Forward podcast. If you would like to submit a question for future Q&A episodes, you can do so on my website at www.fuelingforward.com under the podcast tab, or you can email me at fuelingforwardpodcast@gmail.com. Thanks so much for listening, and I'll see you at the next Fueling Forward Friday.